Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
2023, you guys, and I'm winging it. Hi, it's Jackie Cation. Welcome to the Dork Forest. That's the website, The Dork Forest, if you like a determiner. Dorkforest.com also works. JackieCation.com has all of my stand-up information. Like, it has videos, it has pictures, it has links to this podcast and to my other podcast with Lori Kilmartin. It has a merch store that has Dork Forest t-shirts. It has all of my stand-up merch and all of my CDs and DVDs. So, that's what you know about websites. There's an opportunity, because we're in the new year here, that you can donate to the Dork Forest. I don't have a Patreon. I don't have anything really set up, though I understand you can set up on PayPal a monthly if you wanted to. You could donate and be of to support the show. This is the 17th season, the 17th year I've been putting this stuff out. It's free, but if you have money and would like to throw me some money, boy, howdy. There's a PayPal, there is at my email address, actually, jackie@jackiecation.com, which you can also email me and tell me how much you're enjoying the show. You can also do Venmo if you'd like, which is just Jackie Cation, no hyphen, all one word, picture of this person, me. And then I think that's it. I think I have Zelle, but it's too complicated. Other than that, let's do the credits. Patrick Brady, still in, fixing the audio all these years later. Give it up to Patrick Brady. That's what a lot of your donations support, by the way, because I like to share the wealth. And then Vilmos, he does the websites. And Mike Rickberg wrote and sang that song. Composed and sang that song with his wife now, Sarah. And at the end, he sings the Mexican Hat Dance, which is always fun. Anyway, I'm sure there's more to it. There's a band camp that has a bunch. It has like a stand-up storytelling album that was never released. It's there's also a bunch of live episodes that many of them are free. There were 200 episodes that were not pre-recorded, and I sort of culled through those, and I pulled like 17 of the best ones. There's an album collection of that, 17 hours of Dork Forest. If you run through all of the episodes, go to bandcamp.com, Dork Forest, or Google those words, and you'll find it. Anyway, there's probably more. I can't remember any of it, but you're doing great. Feel free to enjoy the show.
Oh my God, I'm here in my garage, and yet sitting across, but in the same city, Sassy Moen. Welcome to the show, Sassy Moen.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
It's spelled M-O-H-E-N, right?
Yes, so that's correct.
It's at Sassy Moen on the Instagram and Sassy Moen Films on Facebook. Mm-hmm. It's weird that Facebook is somehow better than Twitter now, because I'm back on Facebook. Yeah, it's gross.
I'm with you on that sentiment.
Yeah, and you have a new indie film that's doing the circuit at festivals, and it's called How to Hack Birth Control. Mm-hmm. And if you go to sassymoen.com, mm-hmm. which all this will be in the notes, you can check that out, and that'll be swell. And weirdly enough, your dorkdom is indie films and female driven films.
Yeah, crazy.
And this type of, yeah, turns out we'll see a pattern. So you sent me like a short list, but I printed the long list.
Oh, nice.
I've seen almost none of these.
Great.
I could pick. Why don't I pick one? I mean, the thing is there's some of them I aged out of, like it being like a transcendental, like it was supposed to, it probably changed your life when you saw some of these movies, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And definitely. I am 100. And so I had different movies that changed my life. Though you do have some older ones here that make me laugh. What's the oldest one that you could think of? Is All About Eve old?
Yes, but in this new list that the shorter one I sent you, I had a Lois Weber film called Hypocrites from 1905, I think it is, 1915. I'm butchering the year. She's a female director. I actually just recently rediscovered, and it blew my mind, because this woman was up there with, Cecil B. DeMille and all the big players of the 1910s, and literally changed cinema and changed editing and the way we look at film. And
really?
She was phased out in the early 1920s because of the Hays Code, because all the other thing I learned is that, you know, when cinema started, it was seedy. It was from vaudeville, and it was you know, all those signs on that you see, like, no actors in hotels in Los Angeles.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And so what there was a push to do is to bring more women to the cinema, because they thought then that'll make it more upscale. So they actually made a concerted effort to hire female directors, screenwriters, and editors during this time. And Lois Weber was one of them. And she actually was the first woman to run her own production company. She was making major feature films that had critical acclaim, made a ton of money, and spoke to a woman's voice. And then she was basically just axed from the industry in the early 1920s when that all shifted, because cinema was doing well and it wasn't a Wild West. And then the men wanted all the money and control.
Right, right. We were like, oh, we thought this was going to be just a hobby. We right. want that back.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, fair
but
enough.
She's been, like, written out of the history books. And it was just so shocking to me, because I remember seeing, like, Birth of a Nation and other of those
films. Right, because you study film and
right,
you see
at film
these...
school. And you see, you see all these silent, and the way that even filmmaking was presented to me as a younger person, even through today, was that it was started by men. It was men's stories and a male dominated industry. And there's this whole point that's left out, that the seeds of this, of which we live in, were planted by women. The way that films are made were planted by women, you know?
Right. So she came into it and had to, much like the men, turns out exactly like
yeah.
them, they had to invent these techniques, and they had to use this new technology.
Yeah.
How did she do it that affected their work? Do you know?
Yeah. She was one of the first people to utilize the split screen to tell a story. And when you think about it, in the early 1900s, that was like no small potato, right? Like, they were working with ancients. I mean, you were born then, you said, right?
Right. It was all of a sudden you had to shoot like two things of film, and then you had to cut it in half
physically
and splice it together.
Yeah. And she did it three of them, which is
oh
crazy.
She did a three
a triangle, like a triangle. So it was like two on the side, and, you know, together it made the square. And
so so what people need to remember is that film is about an inch wide, or 35 millimeter would be the 35 millimeter. how wide was it back in the first days?
I couldn't answer that, but I'm assuming not that large.
Or thicker than it was, but whatever it was, she had to shoot three different scenes, and then she had to not just splice it like, here's this scene, like you do an iMovie,
right,
where you're like, I'm going to take this first scene, and then I'm going to add the next batch to it, and then it'll do a crossfade for you. I just learned how to use it, you guys. Anyway, I've been editing clips in my photo app on the phone.
Totally. I mean, it's crazy that you can
I
do
just
that
started
now.
Right. I just started using iMovie, going, oh, this is easier.
Yeah.
Look at that. And but she had to, like, split it lengthwise, like portrait.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Well, what she did is, so she took three different triangles of scenes and put them together. So, and there's like a little gap in the middle, so they made a square. So there's two top triangles here and a bottom one. And so there's three different scenes happening that were all the same scene, like a phone call, the other person on the phone, and a burglar trying to break in and tell this story. And the other thing, to your point, is remembering how expensive film is and was at that time, right? Especially when it first started, when it's not being manufactured as much. It's a new medium. Yeah. Like,
what
you know,
was her name?
Lois Weber.
Lois Weber.
Yeah.
And
she was
what was the name
bitch,
of that?
Just
that, that first, that, what was the name of that first
Hypocrites.
Movie?
Hypocrites.
And what was it about?
I mean, it's about what the titles, but it's about hypocrisy. And it's also
about hypocrisy.
Yeah. About like the church, and also about men and women and their dynamic. That was the other crazy thing, is she was she even did a film about birth control and abortion that was mainstream, that was played in, like, this was before
everyone was psyched.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so she just, and she ran this production company, which I think is just phenomenal, that was turning a profit, and she was making the best deals. And then suddenly, kind of overnight in the early 1920s, everything changed. And so she was written out of Hollywood, and she couldn't get a deal or a movie. And
so she was blacklisted, but how did it, is there a book that you read, or is it just different articles, or what? I mean, anecdotally, how did it come back to you?
Yeah. I am a dork for PBS. PBS is my homeboy.
Excellent.
or homegirl. And they have this really cool series called Lost LA that is about 30 minutes per episode. And they go into sort of hidden histories of Los Angeles that I find fascinating. And this one was about women in cinema. They also have crazy ones about, you know, early settling of Los Angeles with, you know, Native Americans. And then also talking about like various like sub towns, like Bunker Hill. They have a whole thing of what happened to Bunker Hill and just about how different areas of Los Angeles sprung up and how much it influences us today in a way that I didn't really appreciate until I discovered this show.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It seems like there's so much information that is lost and yet can be, if you look deep enough, refound, rediscovered. Totally. And because everyone is supposedly looking for content, not my stand-up specials, oddly enough, but they are indeed looking for content, and you can get, and more people have money, like people of color.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's harder to hide things just because of how much, I mean, it's easier to lie to people, but it's also harder to actually hide the truth if you look for it. And we're all trained a little bit more how to sort of take like a lice comb and go, oh, that is clearly spam. That is clearly misinformation. Yeah. You are clearly have an agenda and it's full of full of lies. So that sounds fascinating. Lost LA on PBS. I am actually going to look that up, see if I can stream that bad boy.
I highly recommend it. They have 5 or 6 seasons. They have a ton of, and all the episodes are so different too.
That's so cool.
And talking about like the gay community, when how that first sprung up here and the stuff that they had to go through to get their rights, and just it's fascinating. I can't recommend
to say that I own a sort of a documentary called Out of the Closet, Out of the Celluloid Closet.
Yeah, I think I know that. Huh, I'm gonna Google it while we're talking.
Yeah, and it was fascinating because it was a sort of the history of how homosexuality was depicted and it is funny because right now my mother-in-law lives with us and we watch a lot of British crime mysteries. That's not her fault. That's on me. What I have known, because she is a gay lady and she has been gay since back in the day, like she's ground floor of lesbianism. And so there's all of these shows and some of them were made in the last 4 or 5 years where it's evil lesbians who are the murderers.
Yeah.
It's just like, or evil gay dudes. And so Out of the Celluloid Closet would talked a lot about the depiction of homosexuality as, you know, as mental illness, as people that weren't, that were either driven mad by society not accepting them, or they were driven mad by the fact that they wanted to get with another person with the same parts.
It's kind of like Downton Abbey tried to do that, and then they realized they shouldn't, and then the gay person became an ally and a great character, and it's like, you should have done that to begin with, but okay.
The learning curve is civilization is incredibly slow. It is, you know, remember icebergs. That would be the analogy if we had any more icebergs.
definitely.
So that movie Hypocrites is fantastic. And that sounds fascinating. So
it's a silent film.
And it's a silent film.
It's available online.
Okay.
To watch. So, most of her work is that's been found. Some of it's been lost forever, which is really sad. But
that is sad. It's so female driven films.
Yeah.
And the ones that sort of inspired you, Sassy Moen, has her own indie film coming. It's doing the circuit right now. How to Hack Birth Control, sassymoen.com. Literally you have your faves, Clerks, which I never saw. I couldn't do it. I tried to watch it. I was these people. Yeah, it reminded me a lot. There were a lot of sort of tongue-in-cheek dude movies. And it felt like a tongue-in-cheek dude movie, which I have enjoyed many movies that are male driven. Clerks was not one of them. So who was that again?
Well, it's Kevin Smith. And one thing, because I think that, so first, just to clarify for the audience, that was first a list of just, I think, indie films and not female yes. films with Clerks.
Right.
But I will say with Clerks and Kevin Smith's voice in general, while I feel like you're totally right, it is about dudes and their broiness, as a woman, I still felt relatability to them, right? It wasn't like completely ostracizing me or cutting me out from the conversation, like so many films do to women.
Yes. You know? And I will, I mean, and the thing is we're all trained, women are, and I'm sure people of color are trained to look for the similarities
yeah.
in entertainment
yeah.
so that you can enjoy things.
Yeah.
Like if there are no, like the Lord of the Rings has oh, two women in
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So in the books. Right?
Right.
And so, but I read it and I, when I was a kid, I would play this game called Imagination and mm-hmm. I had to create characters. I was like, well,
right.
In Star Wars, there was princess. I don't want to be the princess. So clearly Han Solo had an old friend that was
yeah,
me.
Yeah.
And
totally.
I was his friend.
Yeah.
And or Star Trek. I, you know, sure, I was like, totally. I yeah, want to yeah. go on away trips and punch somebody in the nose.
I mean,
I don't want to be.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So I would look for the similarities and then add my own character on top of it.
Totally.
But it became amazing mm-hmm. when, and this is not that current, but it's probably the last 30 years where mm-hmm. there's a lot more women driven stuff.
Yeah.
You don't have to cull through everything to
right.
find it because there is more diversity. And so there's more things to relate to. So Clerks, if I had seen it in my formative years, I probably would have been, well, this is hilarious.
I'm yeah.
because also shitty day job. Who can't relate to that?
Yeah, right. I mean, yeah. the other thing that's inspiring to me about Clerks is knowing the story behind it. It's a story that I can definitely relate to, which is Kevin yeah. Smith took out a bunch of credit cards and made a movie with them. And that launched his career. But what's so cool is he made it for $20,000 in this convenience store. And as an indie filmmaker, watching that, especially when I was younger in high school, it was aspirational to me, right? Because it's like what I started doing, major kind of influenced by him and others, is like when you take your weaknesses and make them strengths, right? So if you can't yep. pay first to blow up a car or go to outer space or wherever you want, what are your strengths? His was he had access to this little dingy corner store in New Jersey, and yep. he had, you know, his friends help out. Like he knew how to play to his strengths, and that's something so powerful because he didn't pretend to be someone he wasn't. And that's
right.
also something that not every filmmaker has the guts to do, right?
So, right. And so he wrote the story that had to be set in a place where he
right.
had access to.
Right.
Like, I think that was, did you ever see El Mariachi? The Rodriguez
I don't think so.
Film? It was remade oh with, who played Zorro in the new Zorro's?
Oh, yeah. Antonio Banderas.
So, Antonio yeah, Banderas yeah, yeah, yeah. did a remake of El Mariachi, but the El Mariachi was his student film.
Yes, yes, yes.
And I think his name is Rodriguez.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Robert Rodriguez. And El Mariachi is in Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
He's a Mexican.
Yeah, yeah.
Mexican filmmaker. And he, when he didn't have a shot, he would take sort of a cutaway of his dog.
Sure. Yeah.
Sort of reacting to stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, or in the case of his dog, not reacting to stuff. and it was kind of fascinating to, so the remake of it actually wasn't as fun.
Right.
As the original one. And then he had like one gun, and it was a story about a guy, a mariachi singer, who accidentally trades guitar cases with a killer.
Oh, okay.
And the gun was in the guitar case. And,
uh-huh.
and
oh,
so he
yeah,
goes
yeah.
to a town, and they think he's this mess. He thinks they
yeah,
think
yeah.
he's this killer. And so it is, you know, and then the only other, I don't see a lot of indie films. And I promise you, even though I am, of course, now that you've mentioned them, thinking of nine indie films, but it was a set in LA, and it was a woman directed it, I think. And it was about one day in the life of a Mexican.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Are you talking about the one where all the Mexicans disappear from Los Angeles? Is that the one you're talking about?
That's it.
Yeah,
it was
yeah.
called One Day.
Day in the Life of. I haven't seen it since it came. Like that was 10 years ago or something, right?
Easily. I saw it at the Dome. I saw it at. In Hollywood. So I mean,
a day without a Mexican.
A day without a Mexican.
Yeah, yeah.
Essentially a one joke premise,
right,
that they beat the hell out of.
Yeah.
And it was a funny enough joke. You know, it was essentially all the Mexicans
right
in California disappear one day.
Yeah.
And then people have to raise their own children and wash their own cars.
Yeah. And care their own lawns. Heaven forbid.
Heaven forbid. And there's one woman left over. And spoiler alert, it is a fun movie. One of the most fascinating things about that movie, because it was clearly fiction. Mm-hmm. And but it was peppered throughout it just stats.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it was just stats that I didn't know.
Right.
And I'm willing to learn, but again, 10 years ago, was I willing to learn?
Yeah.
Sure.
Right.
It turns out, the learning curve got very fast about 6 years ago. And the information overload of being a middle-aged white lady, essentially everyone was like, are you aware of the fishbowl that you live in? And I was like, I am now. Let's fix it.
That's really funny.
Right. So I think the power of, I mean, clearly like sassy moment, clearly your movie is about birth control and feminism and sort of having bodily autonomy. Right?
Yeah.
Being able to make your own decisions, whether they be regrettable or not. Are you kidding me? I walked into any number of dudes' cars because I was looking for another beer.
Yeah.
And then I lived.
Yeah. And Steven's talking about the day in the life, day without a Mexican, is birth control kind of takes similar tropes in the sense that it's a comedy. I pitch it as it's as if Samantha Bee and SNL made a baby that watched a lot of TikTok. So it's, you know, it's satire, it's sketches, and it's also informative at the same time. So in a way that you don't realize that you're learning the entire time that you're watching it because you're laughing so much and enjoying it, but you're also learning about different options of birth control, where to get it, how to get it, what questions to ask, you know, how to ask the questions, things that women are not given or taught or even taught to think to ask, you know, in the first place.
It's literally the things we are taught are just don't be a burden. And so it seems mother-in-law for 77, she has spent 77 years not being a burden. And now she has to ask for help.
Yeah.
And it's tearing her apart, quite honestly. And I'm like, slow your roll, Chris.
Yeah.
You're great. You've earned it. You know, I can, it's not going to, it's not going to kill me to go get you lunch. It's going to all work out.
Yeah.
But I get it because I see my future if I don't think about it, because we all have to learn how to ask for help.
Right.
We have to know what questions to ask if we want to get services
and feel the confidence to ask those questions. I think that's another thing that women are not given outright, because so much of our perspective in life is like, we are the burden. We are the problem. We have to be second to our husbands or our fathers or brothers in their careers and their hopes and dreams and support them, which comes with an inherent guilt. So when you're asking for something, you're like, I don't deserve this. And the spoiler, you do.
And the poor bastards that are men were raised with, the reason we feel that is because they were raised with, you're supposed to take care of her. You're supposed to buy everything. You're supposed to find the money and make sure that you're there for absolutely all of her needs. When in fact, and so they, you know, a lot of them are resentful of it. A lot of them just feel that burden all the time. And that burden bleeds onto us. And you're just like, how about we're all individuals and it's a partnership and it's a team, and you do what you're good at. I'll do what I'm good at. And if I need help, I think I used to do a bit about how Andy, I literally burst into tears and I was like, I feel like I'm a burden. And Andy laughed in my face. And it couldn't have been I couldn't have been a smarter way to deal with it too, because he just went, I think that's the definition of marriage. We're a burden on each other. That's the deal.
Yeah.
And then And then he made up a very boring game that we've never played again, which was, he was like, here's a game idea. Every time you think you're being a burden on me, give me $1. And every time I think I'm being a burden on you, I'll give you $1. And yeah. I promise you, we will never need another dollar. We will just trade that dollar back and forth. And I'm like, well, that is adorable, but that game does not sound
fun. Yeah.
And he was like, well, that is a prototype. And we would have to play test it and make it more interesting. Right. So it's so interesting that, you know, because you can use anything.
Right.
You can use whatever power you have for good or ill, and to educate or to miseducate.
Yeah.
So what are these female women driven films? There were some crossovers. I see Run Lola Run.
Oh my God. That's my favorite movie of all time.
Is it? I've never seen it.
I don't know if you would like it or not, but
German?
It is German. For me, it's one of the reasons that I became a filmmaker, seeing that movie when I was, I think in high school. I was directing before that, directing plays and TV production. But one of the problems was that, you know, to your point, there weren't a lot of movies I could watch where I saw myself reflected in them, you know, because in the 90s, so many of the movies, it was about a woman, she had to give up her career to fall in love, or otherwise she becomes like, you know, an old maid and no one likes her. Or she's stupid.
Very strident. And I bet you, or pushy as
right,
all hell.
Right. Yeah. Totally pushy. And like, or she's really dumb, or, you know, like there weren't really the females that I wanted to see. And Run Lola Run came on the scene. And it, not only is she a strong woman, but she's deeply flawed, but in a likable way, just like, guess what? Every other woman that exists, you know,
right. And people, it turns out.
Just like humans, we're all flawed in some way and go through personal turmoil, you know, who knew? And this movie was so cool. The music is awesome. And it explores this dramatic event that happens to her, and it's three different outcomes. So she decides to solve it three different ways, but also her actions are affected by the random strangers she runs into. But because she makes a different decision in the beginning, it then changes everything, because she runs into these people at different times. And so, and it's actually like a predecessor.
Oh, I have seen this movie.
Have you?
I enjoyed it. Yes.
Yeah. As like a predecessor to Sliding Doors or Memento or those types of films that talk about, like, you know, the paths not taken. And I just thought it was such a cool film, the way it was shot and edited, that it really inspired me to, that I had, it was something, first time I saw a movie that I was like, I want to make that movie. So that made me know that I had a place in the industry, because at least one person got to make a story like I wanted.
Because it was interesting enough, and it was full of sort of like decisions and information and people's lives, right?
Yeah.
But it wasn't sad sack. It was interesting enough that it wasn't like, because sometimes there's these dramas that.
Die.
right. And they feel like they're made for women. And you're like, plink, plink, plink. I'm going to fucking kill myself with that guitar string.
Right.
So, but you have on here, like, so many,
list that I sent you originally.
right. The biggest list of the world. Like Working Girl. That's a movie.
I love that movie.
It really is, you know, it really, that's, you know, the woman boss is a caricature, but the way they kind of made it that she was a terrible woman, but the other women in the movie are good.
It felt reflective of the career experience I felt before the Me Too movement, where it was way more cutthroat, in a sense where the way that society positioned it is that there's a spot for one woman, right? You got the one spot. And if you got it, you had to hold on to it, because every other woman was a threat, because there's only one. And then the Me Too movement happened, and suddenly all the women realized that not only did we have the same experience, but that we're all in this together. And if we all just help each other out, then there's more than one spot available, because we'll make sure that happens. And so, while I think that you're right, like Sigourney Weaver in that film, is, I mean, she's a bitch.
Like, right. You know, she's just an epic asshole. Yeah.
But she's not like over, she still has sort of moments where you understand why she's doing the things she does and how she got to that point in a way that I could understand, because it's like the ultimate obstacle, right? This woman, the lead character, she's going to school, she's trying to make it in business. Everything is against her, her socioeconomic background. And then she finally gets an opportunity, and who's that preventing her? A woman, which is very interesting and can and has definitely happened. So, you know, it's just,
oh my gosh, it's so totally. Right. Bamford used to have a joke about women bosses. And it was a very funny bit. But you know what I was thinking of is that the difference between Working Girl, which I think was made in the 80s,
89.
And The Devil Wears Prada.
Yeah.
And though The Devil Wears Prada is such, I mean, Working Girl at least was one movie. The Devil Wears Prada has always felt like two movies to me. The one that Meryl Streep is in and the one that everyone else
is in. I was going to say the one that Danny Tucci's in.
I don't even get why. She's in this. She's in, like, she's having a midlife crisis and she's a very powerful person.
Right.
And that the, is her name?
Anne Hathaway.
Anne Hathaway, who was also, did you ever see Colossal?
No, I didn't.
Anne Hathaway wanted to be in a monster movie and no one would ever book her.
That's funny.
So she executive produced Colossal, and Colossal is, you would actually like it. It has,
I'll put it on my list actually.
Right. Because it has an indie vibe.
Yeah.
And in the fact that it's a weird little fucking movie is what it is.
Yeah.
And which is kind of the best way to describe some movies where you're because I like a
weird
big
blockbuster.
Weird
isn't always bad. Like weird isn't always bad. I was just saying especially to my fiance about jazz last night. I was like, people think jazz is weird. It is, but I fucking love it.
Right. It's a, and see, I like a blockbuster and I also enjoy big band.
There
so
you go.
So it's not that I can't listen to jazz and I can't see a weird little movie, but I tend, pretty much a woman of the people over here.
Sure.
I'm not, but it's, I can be taught. So maybe I'll like jazz one day, but, okay. Hilariously, Hidden Figures is on this. Was this, I do a joke about how, what, you know, that nobody wants to hear what I've learned from Hidden Figures.
I would love to hear what you learned from Hidden Figures.
Well, I didn't learn that much. I knew that there were women that affected the space race. And I assumed that there were Black women who did, or people of color.
Yeah.
And, but I did like the fact that there was a depiction of that so that I couldn't, so that I could be reminded. And so, because racism and sexism, all your isms, you deal with them, and then all of a sudden, huge reveal, there's more right there. Oh my God, there's another skin cancer lesion right there. And you're like, oh, okay, I guess I'm also a dick about this topic.
Right.
And but yeah, so it goes, what I've done here is I've ticked off the, you can pick any of them, Working Girl, Black Panther, Hidden Figures, Mad Max Fury Road is a movie that I fucking love.
Yeah.
Clueless, Thelma and Louise,
Classics.
His Girl Friday, All About Eve and Amelie. Mm-hmm. Amelie is Andy's favorite movie.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a great film. That was another one that when I was younger that also inspired me. I don't think I would make that type of movie now, but it really rang true to my, you know, young teen self. Of like that
it
was
super appealing.
Yeah.
Super. You're just like, oh, I kind of want to be her.
Yeah.
She seems, it's like I saw Audrey Hepburn, Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when I first saw that, I was like, she's amazing.
Totally. And then you think about it later in life. You're like,
you're a dick. You are a mess of a human being.
Mean to your cat.
You're mean to your cat. You're mean to your possible boyfriend.
Right.
You're using these dudes as stepping stones
plus
and it's exhausting.
What's his face and Asian face with Mickey Rooney with the woof. Did not age well at all.
And never will. Never will. Oh my God. It's blackface and Holiday Inn time. It's not great.
It's, yeah.
But it also,
I find all that. I mean, I just find everything.
Right.
funny because it's just like, this is insane. This is so, how can you not laugh at how terrible this is?
Right. It's literally, it's like watching an iceberg melt. Yes. Is to learn. Yep. This kind of thing. So yeah. So His Girl Friday used to be one of my very favorites.
Yeah.
And it is also troublesome, but but it is every time there's a movie. Yeah. So, but tell me your other favorites that were on the list.
Just like with His Girl Friday, same thing. You watch it now and definitely a lot of stuff you're like, pulling your like necktie a little bit, like, yeah. But like the thing is thinking about in the context of the times. So His Girl Friday, I think that's like 33 or 34 or 35, somewhere around the 1930s, right?
Yeah, yeah. Mid 30s.
Yeah. So sure. We're talking then say 10, 15 years after Lois Weber gets kicked off the game, right? And so you've had men doing this, and now suddenly you've got Katherine Hepburn, who has a job, who's fast talking, who's kind of smart and kind of like, well, here's
His Girl Friday is the other one.
Whichever one of the other one.
Yeah. Yeah. My bad. What one of the three people
that are always in those movies.
Right. And the weird thing is I just saw a movie, Rosalind Russell. Is that what I'm thinking?
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
It is Rosalind Russell.
Oh, His Girl's Friday, 1940. You know, I was mixing it up with the other one.
It happened one night.
Probably Katherine Hepburn and.
And Philadelphia Story or.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah, Philadelphia Story. I think that's what I was thinking of. Or no, Bringing Up Baby. Sorry. That's
Bringing
what
up
I was
baby.
Thinking of those type. I mean, but they're all kind of the same. It's the same formula, redoctored, right. Repurposed every time. But yeah. Again, so still the same point though, is like who the women were in these films was still breakthrough for the time. And while not the best, maybe necessary to then get to the next step. I don't know.
Yeah. 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 It's it is so interesting to me. I was just thinking about the Rosalind Russell. She did these screwball comedies.
Yeah.
That were, because Bringing Up Baby, very much a screwball comedy.
Mm-hmm.
But Rosalind Russell's, it was physical work.
Mm-hmm.
Where she reminds me of sort of like Sandra Bullock or Melissa McCarthy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where she's pulling people through windows and she's like there. I just saw this ridiculous slapstick comedy, and it was heart of the Depression. Right.
Sure. Yeah.
So they were willing to employ women.
You're right.
And they were willing to do all these things. And so it's based on a play that came out something like 9 months earlier.
Yeah.
And in New York, and then Rosalind Russell is doing a movie of it.
Yeah.
And it's about them living in the basement and wanting to sort of make it in New York. And it's about how two working women, they're sisters, and they're like, the pretty one's going to be an actress, and Rosalind Russell, I guess, was not the pretty one. She's going to be a writer.
Mm-hmm.
And so she wants to write for magazines, but they get this apartment in the basement. It reminds me of Clerks because it looks like they had place to
totally.
Shoot.
Yeah.
And
I mean, that's probably what they did.
Yeah. And so there's no glass on the window in apartments in New York in the teens and 20s. It's why they were so cheap. And back when there were horses, all of the when it would rain,
it'd come in.
Just foul and disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
But at one point, the Rosalind Russell, she's doing, it's a conga line with supposedly the Portuguese merchant marine, and I was like, this is the dumbest fucking movie, and yet I watched it. And I was like, compelling narrative for me. I'm in.
Yeah, I mean, but also with Rosalind Russell, you made me think of another movie that she's in, The Women, which is a movie that I actually loathe. I recently rewatched it with my fiance, and he hadn't seen it. I think we watched it like a year or two ago. And I mean, it was supposed to be progressive. That's how it was marketed, right? Starring women, written and directed by a man, and all the crew were men. But
sure,
it was progressive. But the whole premise of the plot is this husband cheats on his wife, and then she needs to win him back. And so it's about how, even though he's done all these terrible things, she doesn't want to be divorced. And so all the hoops she has to jump through to get him back. That's the whole premise of it. And it's disgusting. And then of course they have the few black
people. Talk about the haze code.
Yeah, stereotypical. Right? And then my favorite part is the asbestos snow raining down on people with the label asbestos on it. Like, you know, and you're like, have cancer. Like, you know,
yes, so all that stuff. Really sums up the entire film.
Right, exactly. And yeah. So, you know, but it's like, those types of movies come out, but then you have the few that make it through. This isn't female, but I think about Idiocracy a lot, you know, how that sort of slipped through Fox's radar and cracked. Somehow it got made and it was just making fun of them, you know, and
right, the whole
terrible yeah. things they're doing. And so you can still make these movies and get them out there, you know,
you can. And yet things like the women, like, did you ever see, and of course, I think everyone has, if not on cable, You've Got Mail?
Yeah.
You've Got Mail is such, he's such a liar.
Yeah.
He's stalking her and it's yeah. so gross.
Yeah.
And they're incredibly likable actors and they yeah. make lemonade.
Sure.
But if you were to put anybody else in that movie.
Yeah.
Let's, you know, if it would have been like, I don't know, TJ Miller and Margot Robbie. It would, you know, it would be, it's like you cast that with people who can be assholes,
right.
or can play assholes.
Right.
Margot Robbie is not an asshole.
No, she's not.
And TJ Miller is so broken. It's yeah. hard for him to stand up. And you know, I mean, it'd be like, I'm trying to think, Jeff Ross and Roseanne. There you go.
Perfect.
It's perfect. There you go.
That's in the studio. They'll buy it right up.
Oh my God, they really will.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is there's so many movies now that you watch and you're just like, oh, like that didn't age well at all and stuff. You Got Mail is definitely, that's one of them for sure. That you watch now and you're just like, how did I ever think this was good?
But weirdly enough, Clueless
did not. Yeah. I mean, does age
did
well.
Not.
Yeah.
Does
it,
age
yeah.
Well.
Age yeah. as well. Like they did not suffer any of that.
And because it was so unapologetically.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Female. And that's the other thing too about like directors like Kevin Smith or I'm blanking on the name, the director of Clueless. She's amazing. She also did Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Oh, did she?
I'm like before words yeah. come out of my mouth, even though it already
oh,
did.
That's fine. People yell at their this yeah. the Dork Forest is full of people who yell at their
yeah,
phones.
She did do Fast Times at Ridgemont High. And she did and Look Who's Talking.
What's her name?
Amy Heckerling.
Oh.
Yeah.
I know that name.
Yeah. 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 So
I'm in the part of show business that can occasionally remember yeah. a name,
but it's like, again, it's her style, the unapologetic style of people who aren't caving to the wants and needs of the studio system or different producers. I mean, I've had it said to me before, especially with my earlier work and pitch meetings I've had with producers where they're like, that's a great idea, but it's about a woman. So no one's going to watch it. So it needs to be about a guy or, you know, that there, we need Bam. More men in this or the woman needs to be less strong and that type of stuff. And then you have Clueless that comes out, which totally just changes the game.
Yeah.
With the way women are represented and also just youth culture in general, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, that even watching it now, that scene when, what's her face? She gets on the freeway, she's learning to drive and they're all start screaming. Like, cause she, and they're like, I'm accidentally, ah! They're just on the California freeway and don't know what to do. I mean, I feel like that's sort of relatable still today.
sure. Was Paul Rudd in that?
Was yes,
that
Paul he was. Rudd? And he looks just looking the same as
exactly
he does
now. The same. It's very weird. Though there was a scene at the end of the newest Ant-Man where he looked like he was in his 50s.
Oh, okay.
It was they just actually, at the very, I think it was the stinger. They must not have had the yeah. filter on. And so
they forgot on like the last shots to put the GFX like, filter on it.
It'll be fine. It'll be fine.
That's so funny. I wonder if that's like in his contract. I probably is like must have X, Y, and Z.
If I were him, I yeah. would definitely. Sure.
Notice that with Jennifer Aniston's movies now too.
Yeah. She's perfect not wrong.
Skin. Perfect.
Might
skin.
As well. It's on the Zoom thing, you can just move it all the way over till I almost yeah. don't have a nose. And
yeah.
But so Aliens is yes. on here.
Yeah.
And that one's kind of new. That's not new. That's also from the 80s.
Yeah. You know, and it's also kind of like conflicting for me. It's like that film because I have opinions of James Cameron that have developed more recently. My biggest opinion of him is that his wife divorced him and immediately won an Oscar for best director. And to me, that tells me everything I need to know about a man that she leaves him and then flourishes.
And then she can get,
And that she was, it's been said that she often was what was his, you know, backbone, his, that's how he got to where he was.
It's called a muse.
Yeah.
Sassy Moen, a muse, when she does all the work for
him. Right, exactly.
Yes.
And so, but you know, he does have progressive female characters, like even Titanic, you know, watching that as a kid and seeing Rose and like that she was strong and she stood up for herself and, you know, goodbye.
And she
Billy
let that
Zane.
Guy die.
Yeah, she let
that guy die.
She was like, bye, Jack.
Bye, Jack. That door looked big enough to hold two
right,
people.
Right, exactly. But it wasn't.
I will stand by that. But I clearly not.
Yeah. So, you know, like aliens, I mean, and she saves the cat, you know, so that, you gotta love that. And just like, you know, just seeing her be badass is, oh God, it's just inspiring to me. I watched
it. Really is.
Yeah. Missed the last Avatar though.
I can't, we have like 15 minutes left. And I'm so sorry to have cut. I can have you back to talk about at least three more movies. And so what are the ones you wanted to talk about?
No, I mean, we've covered most of them. This is great. Well,
because Mad Max Fury Road mm-hmm. made me so happy.
Yeah. I mean, that's another one. That's just, God.
Charlize Theron.
Yeah.
And the thing is I didn't recognize her. And then I saw on the back of an airplane seat, I saw the long shot where I was so mad at Seth Rogen, I think it is,
in the long shot. I think so.
I was like, did he just trophy wife himself a movie?
I was going to say, you know, what's also so interesting about that film is, and again, I'm going to like butcher the story. A woman edited it.
And Mad Max?
Yes. Okay. And that is also one thing that has been said of why it was done so well, because she had a sensibility about how, instead of like editing it for like, you know, like the violence, she was able to tell a more full picture because of the way that she views things.
Because Max, name escaping me, Mad Max himself, we walked out of that movie and Andy said to me, did he have an under five? He literally had probably Tom Hardy had like 30 lines in the entire movie. Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, I mean, that's the thing is that what I think is so great now about the film industry is that it's finally opening up to more, more viewpoints. And you know, I don't want it to be misconstrued that I think women should run everything. Although I do agree with
better RBG. For men too.
Yeah, RBG's quote where they're like, how many women is enough for the Supreme Court? And she's like, nine, you know. But right. To have
12.
Yeah, right. Sure. 15. We'll throw out numbers. That like to have different viewpoints just makes a better project. You can have a man directing it, a woman producing it, you know, this minority person doing this, this gay person doing this, and this non-binary. And then you put all of that together in a soup and it's just delicious because it's so different and new. And finally, Hollywood has understood that even like their top grossing films have female leads and minority players. And it's like, so, are you surprised? No, because guess what? There's more than straight white men that go to the movies. Who knew?
Right, exactly. I mean, and there's a lot of like Laura Kilmartin has been talking about how many packs of young men she's seeing in the audience because of stand-up shows. Because there are traditionally it was sort of a date night thing.
Yeah.
And the women would sit through and when I would get on stage, they'd be like, oh my God. Thank God.
Yeah.
And but it would be again looking for the similarities, looking for reasons to laugh at a lot of straight white dudes in a row.
Right.
And I remember Lewis Lee is a guy who owns my home club. He is Chinese. He is from Hong Kong. Mm-hmm. And he likes to book a lot of different. He's like, everyone has money, Jackie, and I want it all. it's really the best line.
No, it's, I mean, that's a perfect way to encompass it. Like, why would you shut yourself off from all of that money? That's a dumb decision.
I thought you were a capitalist.
Are exactly.
I thought this was something you enjoyed.
Totally.
No?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree with that completely. I mean, it's it's really great to even just hear stories like that and just to know how much things have changed. There's so much work still to be done.
Of course.
But, you know, now at least I can actually pitch movies about women and get investing and, you know, investments in my films and people take me seriously. And, you know, it definitely wasn't like that 15 years ago when I first started this. And like, you know, I was just talking to someone how my first feature film that I did in college, you know, we made it our money back. We got distribution. We toured in indie theaters across the country and everyone got jobs in the industry afterwards. All the men got great apprenticeships, got great assistant jobs and have since won Oscars, are producing major TV shows and movies. And I got a job at a production company as a receptionist. That's what it got. The interviews that I could get were all for like bottom tier assistant receptionist jobs. And I even found out later that the company that hired me because the co-owners thought they liked my indie look and they thought it'd be cute if the receptionist also made movies. And that's why they hired me. And so it's just like, you know, exactly. Like stuff like that, that definitely used to happen to me doesn't happen to me now. I mean, and
that's
so,
great.
Yeah, and it's changed and it needs more needs to be done, but it does make me happy to know that like 21-year-olds coming out of college, maybe will get a better job than I did and not have to deal with the crap as much.
Because you can show them your product and you're like, no, this means that I don't have to be the receptionist.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
You could have me be an apprentice.
Yeah.
And make shitty money that way.
Yeah.
That'd be great. And
I'll take the same salary. I just want a better job. Right.
Back then. I just want a little more hope. And,
Can you pay me in hope?
Right. It's like I watch like Bob Odenkirk. Some things just infuriate me about like the options that some dudes get that that women comics don't get. But I also know that using up brain space to be mad at Bob Odenkirk isn't going to do, or Mark Maron isn't going to fix it. And it's going to sap my energy. I'm not even, I'm not going to get to do Jack.
Yeah.
But because when he did that action movie last year.
Oh yeah. I didn't see that.
No, I didn't see it. I didn't need to see it.
I saw the billboards all around town.
You know what?
Punch the face right or something, right?
Yeah. You're just like, it reminds me of my father. My father told me a couple of weeks ago that he was once carjacked. He's 86 and he was carjacked about 10 years ago when he was 75.
What?
In Milwaukee at a stop sign, at a stoplight. Jeez. A guy opened the car door, pulled him out, threw him on the ground. My dad stood up, punched him 4 times. And then that guy drove away with his Lincoln Town Car. Now it was a 92 and my brother Russ did indeed make fun of him and say, why? It's a $900 Lincoln Town Car. What was your purse in there? Because my brother Russ could be a dick. And my dad goes, it was a matter of principle. And I have this to say, I punched him 4 times. It didn't matter. But 10 years ago, when I was 65, 2 punches, I would still have that $900. And then my brother Russ said, let's get you a new Lincoln Town Car. And when my brother Russ says new, he means a 99.
Right. There you
go. So, but the thing, it's like, I think about because I would be an amazing, like I've always wanted it to be like me and anybody, quite honestly. Initially, I think when I was first doing it was Queen Latifah and then it was Wanda Sykes. And now I just want my friend Aaron Jackson. Anyway, but it would just be, we would work at Target.
Yeah.
And then bad guys would crash into Target. They would be like terrorists running from the cops and they would take us hostage, the closing crew. And we would be in our red suits, our red shirts.
Yeah.
And me and Aaron Jackson would then home alone take like fight the terrorists back using plastics.
I want to see that movie. Can I?
Who doesn't want to see that movie?
I want to see that movie.
There could be a love interest. Aaron could fall in love with the pharmacist.
Totally.
This could be how she saves him.
Yeah.
And at one point I want to have a Nerf gun and I want to just go hard target.
you got to have like throw in, you know, like a baby or something. You got to save a child.
Has to be a dog, baby,
a dog, you know.
Oh my God. Somebody brought their service animal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why wouldn't there be a blind person?
You need to save the blind person and the dog.
Did you ever see Homeward Bound? It would be like Shadow coming over the hill. When Shadow came over the hill at the end.
That came out, I think it was like 92 or 93. I was like six.
And you were a baby.
Yeah, I cried.
I sobbed like a baby. And I was babysitting my niece, who was four at the time. And she came over because she had the VHS. So it might have been like 90, whatever it was, 95 or 96. Yes, so she came over. She was like 3 or 4 years old. She goes, "It's okay. He's coming. And I was like, oh my God. Oh my God. She touched my little baby. There's something like a toddler hand. Yeah, a toddler hand reassuring you.
A little tiny.
All right. We're going to go over because I just took 5 minutes of your time. It's always a side where I'm like, no, I want to talk about this more. But this is okay.
I'm always down to talk about these.
What
awesome
else you
things.
Got? What else you got?
Movies. Yeah. I mean, I'm talking about like out of this list was worth talking about. Pieces of April was one that I really loved with what's her face? The one who was Katie Holmes. The one who was a Scientologist.
She got out.
Yeah. Pieces of April was another one that I love that also is another type of filmmaking that is near and dear to my heart, which is sort of like fake documentary, not mockumentary, but the style of it kind of like Succession is shot right now, like kind of, you know, the camera moves sort of behind the action in a way. And that, you know, that movie was about, you know, a family and this troubled daughter and the mom's dying of cancer. And it's that one is incredibly moving. And also it was done, I think like 2009 or seven or something like that. And that kind of goes into
2003.
Oh, geez. Wow. Even before that. Yeah, yeah. I mean, that makes sense of why I would love it because I started film school in 2004. So it's
there you go.
Yeah. Well, a lot of these movies are like the early 2000s that helped, you know, or the 90s that helped shaped who I became as a filmmaker. But like that, and even Me and You and Everyone We Know is another one because that one was also made by a woman. And that was one of the first female directed films that I remember coming out that like made a profit, made a difference, and was finally something I could turn to and be like, see, I can do it because of this one, right? Well, whether or not you love it or not, it is.
I am so sorry. It says that it was directed by a dude.
Oh,
Peter Hedges.
Was it? I thought it was, oh shit. Wasn't it written by a woman?
Maybe it was written by
a
woman.
I'm messing up.
I would like to IMDb this. Oh, it's on HBO Max, you guys. Pieces of April.
I'm talking about Me and You and Everyone We Know. That was directed by Miranda July. Pieces of April was just another. I was about to be like, wait, is my entire existence wrong?
Right, exactly. Did I go to film school for the wrong movie?
Yeah, no. Me and You and Everyone We Know is definitely directed by this indie.
And Everyone We Know. Yeah. Okay. But it was about cancer, the Pieces of April.
Yes, yes. That was about the family and the troubled daughter and wedding.
Yeah, Miranda July. Mm-hmm. So
she did Me and You, Everyone We Know.
Okay, and she was in it.
Yeah, that's another thing too, is that, you know, she wrote, directed, like, because that was breaking boundaries. I remember when I first started, I was told, like, just say you're a director, because if you say the rest of it, it's going to be too much. You know,
too
like,
much.
It's too much. Like, you know, men can have all that, but women, we have to be director or writer. But now at least the multi-hyphenate is appreciated and accepted, which is, it is confusing to me by why it wouldn't be in the first place. Cause it's such an asset as a director to know how to produce, to know how to write, to, you know?
Yeah. You have more to bring to it.
Yeah, exactly. And even just a way of communicating with your coworkers. If you're not writing something, but you are a writer, you know how to talk the language to the person.
Yes.
You know,
and
so.
Yeah. And you know what not to do. Like there's real like sort of inside baseball kind of weird boundaries. You
yeah,
know?
Definitely.
And if you don't cross them, or if you acknowledge them, people are excited they feel seen, they feel
definitely.
And that's literally, I think, what all of this sort of the films are doing for us. Is
I mean, we all look for ourselves in these movies because one thing is, I really like Joseph Campbell. If you know who he is, he, you know, there's a theologian,
author.
Yeah. Author. Perfect. Yeah. And he talks about how, you know, the quest of the hero's quest and this the universal theme that humans for thousands and thousands of years have told these stories, because it's a story of telling us, passing on to us, how we can overcome obstacles, how we can win happiness. That's the point of a movie, is you watch a hero, in quotes, struggle, lose everything, and overcome insurmountable odds to obtain their goal, their happiness. And the more that we can see ourselves in these characters, I think the stronger we'll just be in general.
Yeah, for sure. And and dudes, and that's true for men too.
Yeah,
you know, like, no, there are definitely different kinds of the expectations that are put on all different kinds of people.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, can make you burst into tears when you meet one of these guys, or you know, when I think about how, like, 14-year-old Black children don't get to be children.
Right.
You know, you never get to be a dicky teenager.
Right.
Someone will kill you.
Yeah.
And you're just like, I don't want you to be a dicky person.
Yeah.
But it's sad. It's super sad to me that you don't get to be, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And because I wouldn't have to tolerate it. Your parents would. I would like,
I love that.
I'd like that to be available.
Yeah.
So Thelma and Louise, Black Panther.
Yeah. Love. I mean, these, like, I could talk about all of these movies for hours. I know we only got like 2 minutes left.
Right.
I mean, Thelma and Louise is just kind of freaking love that movie. But also it's funny. It's like, that's directed by a man, but it is such a breakthrough female story, because, you know, for the first time you're really exposing the female experience and what it's like to be constantly hounded by men and everywhere you turn, which is just like, you know, that thing, you know, you're walking down the street, smile, you know, like that, like, you know, even when I was younger, like, guys honking at you when you're walking on a sidewalk, you're like 13 years old. Like, what do you even do with that? You know, like, how is that? How am I supposed to receive that at all? Besides, like, I hope they don't hit me, you know,
over
with their car. Like,
that's why every 10-year-old I know is a them.
Yeah.
Because they'd like to be like, please don't look at me as a sexual person.
Yeah.
And that's the draw of it, right?
Yeah.
And then I remember in Tina Fey's book, she was at some sort of it was a daytime seminary thing with all women. And the woman in charge asked, when did you first know that you were a woman? You know, like, it wasn't, they didn't take you out to dinner and buy you earrings, right? It wasn't when you were 13 and it was your bet mitzvah, you know, was, she said, almost every woman had the same kind of story, which was, well, I was about 12 years old and I was walking down the street and then some 35-year-old guy hit on me. And it was like, I was like, oh yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
It's just foul. It's and gross. So the fact that that could be all just sort of alerted.
Yeah.
Just heads up.
Yeah. And
there's a reason why women.
Yeah. It's powerful. They're power. I mean, that's what, in the end, you know, like, not to promote suicide or anything like that, but they take their lives into their own hands. You know, they're like, screw you guys. And they just, they don't want the consequences of these because it's all unjustifiable to begin with, except for the stuff they do later when they've, you know, decided to blow up trucks and block cops and trunks of cars.
Right. It's the way Title IX didn't go, you know? I mean, there was like, there was an option for women's rights, and we decided to go in a volleyball direction instead of a serial killer mass murderer direction.
Right. I mean, I still think it's incredibly empowering because now you can look at it and think, you know, the whole point is, you know, she gets raped or almost raped, and then they're too afraid to go to the cops because of the point Susan Sarandon makes, which are all totally valid from a woman's perspective. Like, they saw you dancing, they saw you drinking, they saw you all over him. Who are they going to believe? believe. And so then they make these decisions based on that. And that's something that, again, to your point, every woman, I think, can relate to. Who are they going to believe? Because you know your experience. And then someone's like, is that really what happened? Why were are you there? Are you sure?
Yeah. Are you sure? Sometimes women make regrettable decisions and then they want to blame it on someone else. There was one of the younger comics. For the love of God, I cannot remember her name, but she did a bit about being raped.
Yeah.
And how she went and told the cops, and the cops were like, are you sure that's what happened? That you sometimes you regret something. And she's like, I didn't buy Nickelback ticket. I didn't want to have sex with this guy and he ripped my clothes. Is that something? And then she ended it with the greatest sort of point. It was a microcosm. It was probably a 2.5 minute bit, right?
Yeah.
We were all very uncomfortable, but she ended it with the perfect button where she said that the clothes that she was wearing when she was attacked were in her bedroom in the corner. She took them off. She threw them in the corner, couldn't touch them. 2 weeks later, she comes to this incredibly human, resilient woman point of view where she was like, those are the pants that make my ass look the best. And he has already taken my dignity and he's taken all of these things. He doesn't get those pants. Those pants are mine. And it was a laugh line.
Yeah.
And it was funny. And I was like, sister, you took back the night, lady.
Yeah.
Do it.
Just so make whatever you can. That's I mean, it's very powerful for sure. Yeah.
It was pretty and it was funny, and everyone was super nervous when she started.
I love that Nickelback. Yeah.
Anyway, Sassy Moen, I gotta have you back on because
I would love to be back.
I wanted you to like me too much, so I talk too much.
No,
so,
I mean, I love talking to other women who are who have great things to say. I'm like, I could have tea with you all afternoon.
It could happen. So, hey, Rangers, so we've been talking with Sassy Moen, M-O-H-E-N, and it's S-A-S-S-Y, Sassy. Mm-hmm. So go to sassymoen.com. It's How to Hack Birth Control is the indie film. Sassymoen.com will have information about it for sure. At Sassy Moen Films on Facebook, at Sassy Moen on the Instagram. And thank you so much for doing the show.
Thank you so much for having me and letting me dork out about all of these amazing movies. I mean, this is like a dream conversation to have.
It is pretty great. And Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
My hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?